Boy, I wonder what's on my Instagram feed today. New post from Amala Epinobi. Don't let anyone gloss over or rewrite our history. Happy Columbus Day. Columbus Day's not happy. What? I've got to leave a comment here. Oh my gosh. How are you celebrating this genocidal, disease-ridden maniac, white supremacist who came to destroy the indigenous peoples? And how dare you suggest that he achieved something great for Western civilization? He didn't discover anything. They were already there. What a bigot. I can't believe it. Who's rewriting history? It's you. Oh my gosh. Anger emoji, anger emoji, anger emoji. Post. What do you have to say for yourself, Amala Epinobi?
I have a lot to say for myself, guys. I'm fired up today. I'm fired up. I'm not going to let this slide. I'm going to show you the Instagram post again. Here's what has happened to me today. Today's been quite a day for me. Now, I put out this Twitter post this morning. Don't let anybody gloss over or rewrite our history. Happy Columbus Day. And on Twitter, surprisingly, in the echo chamber that is Twitter, this tweet did all right. There was no problem. I didn't get a lot of hate comments on it, as is per usual for my Twitter. But I put it on Instagram, and I don't know what happened. Something must be in the water today, but people were not happy about me saying Happy Columbus Day. I want to go through some of these comments here and see what we got. Let's see. Not everything is rosy, but I love this country. I love that one, Christian. Now I want to find the hate comments that I got. For the record, it wasn't a Disney movie when he arrived, and humans are not indigenous to the Americas. That one's just confusing.
Humans are not indigenous. They just canceled indigenous people themselves.
They just canceled.
They're denying their existence.
You are literally denying the existence of indigenous people in America, which is, I don't know, that's crazy. But people are coming after me, and I'll find some more comments for you guys. But a lot of people hopped in the comments section and are just like, how dare you celebrate a man that caused genocide and smallpox and killed a bunch of Native Americans and all this horrible stuff. All this whole entire campaign to rewrite the very nature that is Columbus Day. If you guys are unaware, there's also Indigenous Peoples Day that has been written into the books and recorded now to coincide with Columbus Day. And so many people gave me heat for simply saying Happy Columbus Day. So let's talk about Christopher Columbus. Let's talk about the evil man that you read about in your Howard Zinn book and are now commenting on my Instagram about, because this is amazing. Honestly, what I think happened is a lot of people just read a bunch of Vox headlines about Christopher Columbus, and now they feel the need to comment about what a genocidal maniac he is without acknowledging the fact that he's very much responsible for the discovery of the Americas and the creation of the New World. And a lot of people commented on this post because I put a little American flag next to Happy Columbus Day, and they said, he didn't even discover the Americas. You're not even educated on what Columbus did. Let's talk about Columbus and his discovery of the West Indies and how brave this man truly was, how brave this genocidal maniac that is Columbus truly was. So Columbus was born poor, vastly illiterate. He lobbied to do this sailing trip, of which he really was not super trained for, in Portugal, was denied to do that, lobbied for years in Spain, and finally got the go-ahead to go ahead and travel. And by travel, I mean taking a small crew on some ships out into the open ocean, not knowing where he was going to land, and without true hard instruments, with just a map and a compass. That's what Columbus did. And through sailing to the Americas, had to experience several times in which the men on his boat tried to mutiny against him in order to sail back to Spain. But Columbus forged ahead and eventually discovered the West Indies. And when he did, he found a tribe of Native Americans. What were those Native Americans doing? Eating each other. They were cannibals. They were eating particularly fetuses and babies because that was considered a delicacy. And Columbus came and was going through one of the first diplomatic political ventures that had ever happened in these lands. The first person to do that. And now we've decided to denigrate Christopher Columbus and paint him as some sort of genocidal maniac who had a complete disregard for the natives, which if you go and read his writings, that's absolutely not true either. So From our cushy little apartments on our iPhones while we're sitting and watching Netflix, people are posting about what a horrible person Christopher Columbus is and how he's not representative of America. And you know what I say to that? Christopher Columbus is not representative of America. Christopher Columbus was way stronger and way braver and way ballsier than any American that lives today, who went on a trip not knowing where he was going to land, not knowing what he was going to find, with his men mutinying against him, carrying nothing with him but his faith in the Lord, his Christianity, and landed in the West Indies and created the ventures that would eventually create the New World and the America that we now sit very cushy in today. So it's amazing to me the response that I got for this tweet.
All right. Well, tell us how you really feel.
I am telling you how I really, really feel. You cannot, I'm just going to keep ranting.
No, please.
You cannot take a historical figure like this that was simply acting in the interest of God, in the interest of country, and in the interest of his own historical time, and then take what he has done, transmit it through the lens of modernity, and then judge him by today's standards. If you were living back then, and Taylor made this point, if you were living back then in the time that Columbus was living in, and you got the go-ahead to go on this venture, guess what? Most of you probably wouldn't do it because you'd be too weak to do it. But Christopher Columbus did it, and you would be acting in the same interest and through the same historical lens as he was, because what he did was acceptable in the time, just like it's not acceptable now. So you don't get to judge people historically through the lens of modernity. You don't get to do that. And if we did do that, we would be canceling nearly every single historical figure that we hold on a high pedestal today. We would be canceling Martin Luther King. We'd be canceling Obama. We'd be canceling Mother Teresa. We'd be canceling the Dalai Lama. We'd be canceling Abraham Lincoln if we truly viewed all these people through the lens of modernity that we're trying to view Christopher Columbus as. They would all be canceled. We would end all of their days. We would change MLK's day to Cheating Husband Day. That's what we would do. We would change MLK's day to pro-gay marriage day because he was anti-gay marriage. We would do the same thing with the day that I'm sure we're going to create for Obama someday, because they all function through a different lens that does not uphold in modernity now, at least not to leftist standards. So what do we do with Christopher Columbus?
What do we do with him?
Mm-hmm.
Erase him from history and just assume that the blessings of modernity that we enjoy today just appeared out of thin air, and we can take them for granted and just know that things will always be successful and prosperous, and no one has to actually like take risks or, you know, be courageous and go explore the unknown and attempt great things.
Right.
You know, we can just all be taken care of and sit back and just learn about how wonderful the government is to take care of us, and how great our progressive ideas are, and we can, you know, that's all we really need to worry about.
Right. I hope that you are a perfect human being right now. I hope that you are absolutely perfect, that you do no wrong in these moments right now, because 200 years from now, when people are reading about you and they find out that you don't uphold the standards of 200 years in the future, you're going to get canceled. So I hope that everybody right now who's commented on this post hating on Christopher Columbus is an absolutely perfect, ideal human being.
You better scrub your Twitter feed right now. Delete everything you've ever tweeted, because they will search it and they will find you, and you will be canceled.
That is exactly right. Now I want to get into some other comments about Christopher Columbus. This is a story out of the Daily Wire. NBA's Popovich: Italian Americans honoring Columbus like being proud of Hitler because we are German. And I see people actually posting in the comments right now under this YouTube stream that liking Christopher Columbus or celebrating Christopher Columbus is like celebrating Hitler. It amazes me. And it speaks to the fact that people have not done any reading about Christopher Columbus outside of a People's History of the United States of America by Howard Zinn, and that total repainting of who he was as a man. As I said, he was one of the first people to actually create diplomatic political actions in the West Indies, and many times in regard to Native Americans, in saving their lives, actually. There were colonials who had come and wanted to kill Native Americans, and through diplomacy, Christopher Columbus stopped that from happening. So he's not a genocidal maniac who had a complete disregard for Native Americans. He's actually very far from it. And if you read about him, he actually anticipated the way that he was going to be judged. And he says that when you do judge me as a captain who came into a world that was completely different from the world that he was living in, was far less diplomatic, was far less established, had no form of true actual governance. And he had to come and work that out on his own, with nothing but a compass and a map. So while you're tweeting from your iPhone, I would love you to think about what you would do in Columbus's shoes. But Popovich talks about Christopher Columbus, and we go through this whole debate. Is it Christopher Columbus Day? Is it Indigenous Peoples Day? And he said, should we be proud of Hitler because we are Germans? And he's obviously likening Christopher Columbus to Hitler. Amazing.
Seems like a totally apt comparison.
Completely apt comparison, because Christopher Columbus definitely went over to the West Indies and killed 6 million people simply because of who they were and who they were born as. Yep. Yep. And showed absolute disregard for their lives.
It's just absurd. And I mean, let me ask you, what do you think the motive is for denigrating Columbus on this holiday? What's the motive for renaming it Indigenous Peoples Day and erasing the feats of Western civilization? Like, what, you know, where does that come from?
I think it comes from the same narrative that we call our founding fathers white supremacists. It's that same exact narrative. It's this effort to say anything that has been done historically by a white male in this country is for naught. We should brush it off because they're all white supremacists. They're all neo-Nazis. They're all fascists. That's what they're trying to do. And that's an effort to erase our history so that it can be rewritten through this leftist lens, through the 1619 Project, through critical race theory, through gender theory. Because if we do that, if we solidify that the founding of our country that we have so long accepted because it is objectively true, if we solidify that that's actually false, that it's actually evil, that it was actually harmful, instead of creating one of the best countries in the world, creating the new world itself, we can rewrite everything and we can tear down all the institutions that were created after that, because we've labeled its foundation as evil. If everything is founded in evil, then everything must go, right? Everything must burn. And then we must create this new utopia where we accept a different form of history that alienates Christopher Columbus, that doesn't talk about the founding fathers, that focuses on slave ships and indigenous people being genocided.
Yes, that's it. Exactly. It is a relatively new phenomenon in U.S. history and really world history in the West to hate our own heroes, our own cultural heroes who did these great feats. Mm-hmm. And I think it stems from the rise of this postmodern Marxist ideology that really spread in the 1960s that caused us to it's the goal of ushering in a Marxist revolution is why they want to set up America as evil, as you're describing. And that is, you're literally playing into the hands of ideologues and academics in the 1960s who planned this, who tried to seed these ideas into our academy and into our institution and into our culture so that we would eat ourselves alive. It's like, and we're infected with an autoimmune disease, mm-hmm. and we're eating ourselves alive and hating our own culture and villainizing our heroes. Just assuming that our new modern sensibilities that are entirely theoretical are better than thousands of years of the development of morals and the wisdom from Judeo-Christian values throughout all history, and we can just discard all. Like, I was thinking about this. Like, look at the latest Star Wars movie. You haven't seen it, but mm-hmm. they have this whole bit about like going to the old Jedi temple and burning it down. And you see this undertones in our culture, left and right. Not left and right, but like, you know what I mean, all over the place. Of we can dispense with the past. That's the message. Is like, we don't need to all the traditional framework for how we think about ourselves, understand ourselves in the context of history, how we look at the great achievements that led to where we are today, stemming all the way back to Roman Athens and Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. All that is lanyap or hogwash, mm-hmm. and it should be lanyap is a Louisiana term. Sorry, I was a little slip there. But all that should be completely discarded, and in favor of the new revolution, because we are so enlightened. And if it was us living in those times, we never would have committed any atrocities. It's an utter lack of humility and ignorance and stupidity. And you are no morally better than Christopher Columbus or the prison guards in concentration camps, for that matter. You can't assume that given the same set of circumstances, you would have been any different. And if you lack that humility as a human being, you're capable of tremendous evil.
Yeah, and it's the same reason why you parrot everything that you read in a headline, because you are a product of your environment. You are a product of your era. If you were born in that era, you'd be parroting the same stuff that everybody else was saying. You would not stick out and go, well, hey guys, we don't need to go and talk about how the the indigenous people are uncivilized, you would have held the same narrative. You would have been that same person. Except really, you would not have been Christopher Columbus, because nobody was as brave as Christopher Columbus. And Christopher Columbus saw something that other people didn't. He saw a chance and an opportunity that other people didn't. And he lobbied for years, years, repeatedly being turned down to go on these voyages, and continued to fight for it, and eventually did that. So Christopher Columbus was the outlier of his time. And to think that somehow if we were born back then, we would be different and that we would not uphold the same transgressions that they did is asinine. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And the people who enabled the greatest atrocities in history were people who did not look at, were not aware of history, honestly, and did not think for themselves. And I think that when you are running with narratives that usurp the history that we know and just deny obvious facts about history and rewrite it to fit a narrative, you are making yourself vulnerable to be somebody who enables the type of authoritarian, totalitarian, actual genocide that you are criticizing.
I see people commenting right now, do you actually think that we would be complicit in genocide? Yes. You actually would. You would.
Australia steps from it right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And people are still voting and supporting that. Voting for and supporting that. So
yes. Like, look at the different lenses. And it doesn't have to be through the same lens of simple genocide and subjugating people. Look at Australia. Look at how many people are complicit in other people being subjugated and having their liberties taken away. Obviously, they're not going out in the streets and gunning people down. Yet
they're just spraying them with mace,
right?
For the great crime of leaving your house
and beating them in the streets. And why? Because they subscribe to a narrative and they are a product of their environment and their era. They're taking the information that has been disseminated down to them and they are using that in their lives. It seems to me that we think that people, that we as individuals, where we're so self-centered in ourselves and so self-righteous that we believe that through all injustice we would just prevail, we would be above it all. Mm-hmm. That's clearly not the case. And if you look historically, over and over this has happened. Over and over this has happened. We focus so much on the natives and slavery. Look outside of America. Look at every single country, every single piece of land that has ever existed, and all the different tales of subjugation and killing and wars and genocide that has ever happened. And it's because people are a product of their environment and what they hear and what they are taught, and they go with those lines. You've simply been taught that genocide was wrong, which is great that you've been taught that. I'm glad that we've all been taught that. But if you weren't, you would be doing it. And it's just a simple fact. We do as we are told, we do as we are taught. And that's exactly why all this stuff around mandates and taking away people's freedoms are happening, because we are told a narrative and sold it to us, and then we adopt it.
Yeah, and if you're so worried about genocide, how about saying something and anything about the atrocities committed by Stalin and Mao and Che Guevara? Oh, throughout history, that are unambiguously evil acts of tyranny that weren't done inadvertently spreading diseases among natives, but literally on purposefully starving millions and millions of people to death in concentration camps. It defies reason. If you're really concerned about atrocities, I never hear these people criticize these leftist leaders.
Right.
These radical communists. You never hear anything about that.
You don't. And it's because we all think that we are above being horrible human beings. We all think that we are above everybody else that has ever been historically present. We all think that no human today could ever commit such a transgression. Even though these things are happening right now, genocide is happening as we speak. Slavery is happening as we speak. Look at different countries in Africa right now. Look at China. Look at North Korea. There is active genocide and slavery happening right now on this earth because people are subscribed to a narrative that allows that. And people have been taught that since the day that we're born. To think that people just automatically are self-righteous and rise above these things is false. It's not accurate when it comes to the human condition. So I just don't understand this whole narrative around Christopher Columbus. We are actively proving, we are actively going against this narrative in today's time, right now, as we speak. Yet we can sit here and talk so much crap about Christopher Columbus and what a horrible person he is.
Yeah. On the hemisphere and continent that he spread Western civilization too. And we're standing on his shoulders, sitting on his shoulders right here today. And you are too on your keyboard and your keyboard warriors out there. Mm-hmm. And there's just absolutely no humility. It's astounding.
It is astounding. And I feel like we should move on because I've harped on this a little bit too long. But that's my thoughts on Christopher Columbus and the onslaught of backlash that has been commented under that tweet post. Now, moving on, we're moving on to DC Comics. Here's the title out of New York Post. New Superman revealed to be bisexual global activist in DC Comics. Now, let's get into what they're doing with comic books and characters and media and entertainment today. Now, continuing a recent trend of comic book characters coming out as LGBTQ, Superman is now confirmed to be bisexual and on the fight for global social issues, according to DC team behind the characters who spoke to IGN. Now, I want to get to a quote in particular from one of the writers of this comic. His name is Tom Taylor. Here's some of the graphics from the comic, if you were curious, although I don't know how many of you were actually curious about that. But the question for John and for our creative team is, what should a new Superman fight for today? Can a 17-year-old Superman battle against giant robots while ignoring the climate crisis? Of course not. Can someone with super sight and super hearing ignore injustices beyond his borders? Can he ignore the plight of asylum seekers? Yes, because he's fictional. He's a fictional character. So absolutely, he can ignore the plight of asylum seekers.
No, Amala, our cultural heroes need to be social justice warriors. This is what happens when you have the colleges that writers in Hollywood and everyone are taken over by ideologues, and their biggest pursuit of meaning in life and everything that they can imagine of what it means to be a hero is no longer about these transcendent grand narrative stories, or, you know, the being truly heroic, having courage and having, you know, discovering that you have unique power and learning how to use that to help people. It's really just about being an activist for leftist politics. That is the ultimate summation of what it means to be a hero in today's day and age, according to these people.
Yeah, and apparently we get labeled as conservatives as the people who are indoctrinating. I just don't see it. I mean, look at every single media outlet, look at our entertainment, look at our school systems. Where is the indoctrination truly coming from? It's coming from the left. And Superman did not used to be that. It was not swayable in any direction whatsoever. It was completely unbiased. It was merely for fun and entertainment for children. Why are children at the forefront of this political battle when it comes to the culture war right now? It's because they know that children are susceptible to this, and that if they teach them at a young age, they will carry it with them for as long as they can, and in their hopes that it will usurp parents' powers when they're trying to teach their kids.
Yeah, this is obviously an intentional effort to change the way people think about heroes and change the way children think about what it means to what they should aspire to. You're literally trying to indoctrinate them to become activists. And it, you know, we long for the days when movies and our cultural stories were apolitical and were more about universal human experiences and universal human truths about what it means to take responsibility for your power and look out for other people and serve the world in good, you know. And instead, all that our children have to look forward to now is the best you can hope to be in life is a pink-haired activist.
Yeah, and what is the solution to this on our side of things? Are we supposed to come out with separate comics that do the opposite? No, I think we should come out with comics that are just simply unbiased, that are simply made to entertain kids. But at this point, what do we do? What is our response to all of our media and entertainment, specifically for children, being tools for indoctrination?
I feel like there's a common theme here. We're for an honest telling of history when it comes to Columbus, when it comes to our founding fathers and the history of race, slavery in America. We're totally willing to look at the ugly side of things and be honest. And then in the same way, we just want neutral stories. We don't need you to make Superman a Republican. We just want universally good heroic stories that, like we've always had in Western civilization,
yeah.
And even beyond that. But that's too much to ask for these people. It's either this, it's our narrative or nothing. And I've been thinking about this lately. Like, when's the last time you heard anyone talk about the idea of tolerance or pluralism? Remember that used to be a buzzword even among liberals? It was like, we're the tolerance people. Right. And now I've not heard anyone try to champion the idea of tolerance in I don't know how long.
And you're absolutely
right. But tolerance is about people who disagree with you, and there's no longer room in these activist minds who are dominating all of our institutions for people who disagree. And that's the same thing with the mandates that we're seeing now across the country. It's if you defy what we are mandating, you will be stamped out. Your rights will be stripped, and there's no room for pluralism, people of different viewpoints coexisting in a society. And they're taking any opportunity they have to stamp out anyone who disagrees. And, you know, once upon a time, the left was associated with tolerance, and it's nowhere to be found these days.
The left also used to be super free speech, super anti-establishment, super anti any government system or government, FBI, CIA, anything you could think of. The left was anti, and now they're not. They've completely shifted. But I think, you know, there is a lack of tolerance on both sides. I hear from conservatives and leftists that, why should I ever hang out with somebody who doesn't have my views? Why should I ever have anybody in my life that doesn't support my views? And we have transformed from accepting tolerance and saying, you know, we need to find a way to coexist, to just absolutely throwing that out the window. And while I do think that happens more so on the left than anywhere else, I've met conservatives who do the same. Mm-hmm. And that's not right. How are we ever going to reach a truth? How are we ever going to create a society that which we can coexist in, yep, without those conversations, without doing it? We cannot forget the virtue of tolerance when we're having these discussions.
Yeah, if there's to be any hope of this, then we have to learn how to coexist with people with whom we disagree. That's not to say that you can't be stand by what you believe in or ever have to compromise on it, but it is to say that you need to make space. Or, you know, no one will ever completely agree with you 100%, mm-hmm, even in a small community, much less in an entire country. So if we don't have a country that's big enough for people who disagree, which was the idea of America was founded on, then what do we have at all? I mean, you cannot have a functional society where there's no room for people to disagree.
You're absolutely right. Now, speaking of switching narratives and tricking people, here is a story out of Southwest Airlines. CNBC states here, Southwest canceled more than 1,800 flights this weekend, blaming weather and staffing.
Apparently the weather only affects Southwest and not all the other airlines.
Right. I haven't heard about any crazy snowstorms, hurricanes, anything wild happening on our side of things, on the northern side of things, on the eastern side of things. But Southwest Airlines is blaming the weather for their 1,800 flights that have been canceled this past weekend. What really strikes me is that I'm pretty sure Southwest mandated their vaccines, and I'm pretty sure because of that, they have far fewer staff than they were operating at before.
It seems just like no one's working around the country these days. But yeah, I mean, this is a oddly, I don't know, very sudden and very deeply impactful event that's really causing a lot of problems, mm-hmm, for Southwest. And it would be a shame if people were somehow standing up to mandates that were requiring them to do things they didn't want to do, that had nothing to do with them performing their duties at their job. It would be very strange if more people did this and we just had a total
exactly
meltdown.
Yeah, maybe we a total restructuring of what employers are allowed to do. This is all allegedly. Mm-hmm. Allegedly.
Hypothetically,
I feel like if a business mandated vaccinations and employees were not down with that mandate of vaccinations and they choose not to get vaccinated and then they choose not to work for that company anymore, maybe that company would have a hard time keeping its doors open, keeping people in the air. And maybe that company would then publish a story blaming it on the weather when really they're understaffed. But allegedly.
These are all hypothetical things. We're not making any overt claims about this on our podcast today.
I absolutely would never make a claim about Southwest Airlines mandating vaccines and then not having enough employees to actually staff their flights and then having to cancel 1,800 flights over this past weekend. Never.
we would never suggest that protests in such way and organizing around standing up for what you believe in is an effective way to stand up for your values and cause things to shift back in your own direction.
Never. And Matt Walsh tweeted here, praying for Southwest today. They are being forced to cancel thousands of flights due to weather conditions that only affect their airplanes and nobody else's. Very unique weather phenomenon. I mean, it's very, some might even call that racist because it's only affecting Southwest Airlines. That's pretty discriminatory.
Southwest is oppressed by the weather.
Yes.
Apparently.
Yes, the weather is discriminating against Southwest Airlines and allowing American, Delta, Frontier, Spirit, United Emirates, anybody you can think of to remain in the air.
That's a pretty good list for someone who's only been flying for like 6 months.
Hey, what can I say? I'm learning. I'm a quick learner. Now, one more story here, and then we have a special guest on the show today by the name of Robert P. George, who broke a story that we talked about earlier in this week. This is by Bill Malugan. We're big fans of Bill out here. Taylor and I actually met him at a charity benefit. Very nice guy. But you may recognize Bill's name because he works for Fox LA, and he has been our man at the border with his drones on his helicopter, letting us know what's actually happening at the border when the other mainstream media outlets won't do so. Here's what he tweeted out. New, what does it look like to not build the border wall? Our drone is overhead in far Texas at one location where steel for the border wall has been baking in the sun and going to waste since January. Tens of millions of dollars worth of steel here already paid for. And here is the video that goes along with this tweet. Let's get into it.
Where a bunch of the steel that was supposed to go towards the wall has just been sitting out in the open, baking in the sun and rusting ever since January. I'm told there are about 10,000 of these wall panels just sitting here. This is in far Texas. Each panel worth about $5,000. You can do the math, upwards of $50 million just sitting there going to absolute waste. Keep in mind, taxpayers have already paid for this. It's bought and paid for, and nothing is happening with it. This is one of two locations. There's a second location right down the street from there where there's even more panels, over $100 million worth of these panels just sitting there. I'm told by a federal source they bought enough steel for more than 100 miles of wall down here. Only about 14 was built before President Biden halted all construction. Take a look at this second piece of video our drone team shot where we're standing here in La Jolla, Texas. This is on Saturday. You can see more steel just sitting out here in the sun going unused. This was ready to go into the ground. They started building the wall out here in La Jolla where they really need it. We see runners coming through here all the time. We've shown you guys video from La Jolla for the past 6 months now. You've seen how many people come through this area. Border agents tell us they really need the wall here. They're incredibly frustrated. They're not going to get it because they can't be everywhere at once, and the wall would be a force multiplier for them to help create choke points. And former ICE director Tom Homan is not mincing his words. He says it just doesn't make any sense to not build this wall given this current surge. Take a listen.
The secretary's decision, let's take another tool away from the Border Patrol to make their job harder so there's even more gotaways. Look at where the crisis in Del Rio and Rio Grande Valley are right now. Where are those tens of thousands of people coming across?
There you go. That's the coverage by Fox LA and Bill Malugan over the steel that is sitting and rusting at the border in Texas. As he said, 100 miles were meant to be built, and they have enough steel sitting there rusting in the sun for 100 miles, yet only 14 of them have been built at the Texas border.
I don't know why these people aren't working on this. Can't imagine.
I can't imagine why. As tens of thousands of immigrants flood the Texas southern border, I can't imagine why they wouldn't want to be like building the border wall.
Solutions laying there right in front of you. You already paid for it, but it's just laying there for some reason.
But you know who's working on this with the asylum seekers? Bisexual Superman.
Yes.
17-year-old bisexual Superman in a DC comic, which I am not going to read, but maybe we will buy a copy and read it on the show.
That's right. Yeah. His mandate as Superman is to help the asylum seekers. So even if we built the wall, bisexual Superman would just be flying them over the wall one
right
at a time. So
yeah,
it's fine. He would lift the whole caravan and
exactly. Know. And since he's working on climate change, maybe he'll stop that steel from rusting in the sun as well.
Very true.
Maybe we'll get some benefit from bisexual Superman. It's quite possible that we will. It just gets, I don't know, guys, it just gets crazier and crazier every day. And then I think, you know what? People are going to wake up from this. I think people are waking up from this. This is my hopeful. Do you think that people are waking up from this insanity?
I don't know. I live in Los Angeles, and so it's hard to believe that people wake up from insanity. But honestly, the Southwest thing gives me glimmers of hope. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things lately that I've seen that has given me more encouragement than I think, or like just more optimism, which we'll hear about a little bit about the difference between hope and optimism from Robert P. George here in a second.
Yes, we will.
But honestly, like seeing people, I mean, hypothetically, organize, stand up for what they believe in, and refuse to comply with tyranny is something that I think will make a difference. And I don't know. I think if enough people really get on board, like now's the time to speak up. Now's the time. If you were waiting, if you're, you know, too scared to say something at your school or at your workplace or wherever you are in your community, don't wait any longer. The scales can tip. And we can make a difference and we can start to reverse this tyranny. I do believe that still.
Yeah, that is exact. But, you know, people have to recognize that there's tyranny first. And sometimes that takes it knocking right at your door. But luckily, we have somebody to talk to. I know you guys have been talking. We've been talking a lot about the woke universities and the woke colleges and all that fun stuff that's happening to our young people and our young conservatives who are trying to get higher education. But we have a special guest on the show, and I'll just leave him to it, you know. Hi, everybody. And on the show today, we have a special guest by the name of Robert George. He is a professor at Princeton University, as well as one of our tenured 5-minute video presenters. We just put out a video this past week with Robbie, who went over the difference between a republic and a democracy. Mr. George, thank you so much for being on the program.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. So you put out a story on Twitter that really went viral. Everybody's been talking about it, about a man by the name of Dorian Abbott getting somewhat canceled at MIT. And for our viewers that haven't heard this story yet, I kind of want you to go over your retelling of what happened here.
Well, yes. MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, has a pretty good claim to being the most distinguished STEM university in the world, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. It's an extraordinary place filled with extraordinary scientists and other scholars. Dorian Abbott is a geophysicist, a tenured member of the faculty at the University of Chicago, another very, very distinguished institution. And for his work in geophysics, and especially his work in the area of climatology and astrophysics, he was invited by MIT to give one of its major distinguished honorific named lectures. It's called the Carlson Lecture, and he accepted that invitation and was scheduled to give the lecture on October 21st at MIT. Everything seemed fine. This is the normal way things are done in academia. But then when the lecture was publicized, a relatively small group of graduate students and other activists decided that they would try to get the lecture canceled. They campaigned to cancel the lecture, not because of anything they anticipated Professor Abbott saying during the lecture, which was going to be on how we determine what the climate is like on planets outside our solar system. Rather, they wanted it to be canceled because they don't like Dorian Abbott's views on questions of affirmative action, racial preferences in admissions and hiring and so forth, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Professor Abbott and a co-author had written a little piece for Newsweek in which they criticized the current orthodoxy on university campuses when it comes to so-called DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and proposed instead that we replace that with what they called merit, fairness, and equality. He made a perfectly reasonable argument for a perfectly reasonable position, in fact, a commendable position, in which we would be treating people as individuals, not categorizing people by groups and awarding places based on group identity and so forth. But of course, this was unacceptable to the woke. So the mob formed, they put pressure on MIT, and this distinguished Institute of Science and Technology, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, in 8 days caved into the mob and canceled Dorian Abbott's lecture. Well, when this came to mind, it should amaze you. It should horrify you. It should horrify everybody. This is not how science proceeds. This is not how scholarship proceeds. We do not let politically motivated mobs cancel distinguished scholarly or scientific lectures. So I was not going to take this lying down. When it came to my attention, Professor Abbott brought it to my attention. When it came to my attention, I immediately shared the information with my colleagues at the Academic Freedom Alliance, which I helped to found some months ago. I also took to social media, particularly to Twitter, to call attention to the disgraceful behavior of MIT officials at MIT. When MIT refused to come to its senses on this, when they informed the Academic Freedom Alliance that they intended to maintain the cancellation of the lecture, I then arranged for Professor Abbott to be invited to give the very lecture on the very date and at the very time it was to be given at MIT at Princeton under the auspices of the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions, which I founded and have the honor to direct. So the lecture is going to go forward. People are going to hear. In fact, thousands upon thousands of people have signed up to hear it. It's going to be by Zoom. And so we've had an amazing number of people registering to hear the lecture, probably many more than would have heard it at MIT. In fact, I'm sure of that. But this show is going to go on. It's just not going to go on at MIT. It's shameful what MIT has done here. Absolutely shameful, disgraceful. They should be hanging their heads or walking away with their tail between their legs. Really what they should do is say, you know what? We made a mistake. We apologize. We caved into pressure. We should never have done that. We're going to redo this thing here, and we're going to have Professor Abbott come on October 21st and give the lecture at MIT. And I would gladly hand that lecture back over to them. But since that doesn't seem to be happening, we're going to be hosting the lecture at Princeton.
Yeah, he's lucky. He's been able to network and create a wider audience for this, but there are people that don't have that opportunity. And it seems to be an epidemic within universities and these college settings. I mean, we saw it with Peter Boghossian having to leave his university. We saw it with the C-16 bill that Jordan Peterson had to deal with. And it seems like professors nowadays who make completely benign statements that really point to a more objective truth or a better solution to everything going on right now are starting to be canceled, increasingly so. What do you think that says about the college and university system as we have it today?
It doesn't say anything very good about contemporary higher education, and it doesn't say anything any good about our culture. What's happening in higher ed is reflecting broader trends in the intellectual and, indeed, the popular culture. But it's especially bad that it is happening in colleges and universities. Those institutions' very reason for being is truth-seeking. And if we want the truth to be sought, if we want to be a culture that has a flourishing truth-seeking project in our colleges and universities and our educational system, we need to recognize that freedom of thought, inquiry, discussion, expression is to intellectual life what oxygen is to biological life. If we allow freedom of thought and inquiry and speech to collapse, intellectual life in this culture will die in the same way that if you deprive a person of oxygen for several minutes, they're going to die. And that would be a tragedy beyond reckoning. And so that's why at least some of us in academic life are saying, we are not going to put up with this. We are not going to let this happen. We're going to fight back with every breath in our body and by every legitimate means we can find. And this is just one example of that fighting back.
And because you're fighting, I'm assuming you're optimistic about the situation with universities and colleges and the route that they're going to go down. Do you think the pendulum does truly swing back after all this insanity?
Well, I can't confess to being optimistic, but I can confess to being hopeful. There's a difference. Optimism is a prediction of what's going to happen. Hope is a virtue, and virtues are active things. When one has hope, one is dedicated to making it happen. One plans to be part of the solution. So that's what I have. I have hope. And I'm encouraged in that hope by so many of my fellow academics here at Princeton and around the country, including some who've now written in from MIT who are appalled at what their institution has done. So many people saying, you know what, we're just not going to allow this to happen. We're not going to take this anymore. We are going to fight back. The Academic Freedom Alliance being formed is a very good step in that direction. It's part of this movement of hope, really, keeping hope alive to turn things around in contemporary higher education.
Amazing. Now, funnily enough, you just did a 5-minute video with us that talks about the difference between a republic and a democracy. And you make the point that a republic keeps power from being concentrated in one place. And you talk about the issue of mob rule. Now, it seems like we are experiencing mob rule, but not by a majority anymore. It's by a very small minority that is starting to control the way our institutions function in America. How do you think that happened? And what do you think the solution is to this sort of rule?
The mob figured out a tactic that works. At least it's worked for them so far. And that tactic is intimidation. They think, and so far they've had a lot of success, that by vilifying people, stigmatizing people, defaming people, they will have all of us so scared that we will bend to their will. Either we will go along with what they want to do, or we will stand by in silence as they do it. Now, that's bullying. That's all that is. It's bullying. The minority is getting its way by bullying. Now, I don't know what your mom and dad taught you about what you do when you have a bully. Mine taught me is that you don't allow that bully to intimidate you. You stand your ground against that bully, and pretty soon you'll find them backing down, because in the heart of every bully is a coward. And when you stand up to a coward, they're gonna run away. And I'm gonna stand up, and I know a lot of my colleagues now in academia are gonna stand up to these bullies.
Amazing. Now, I've heard from a lot of conservative students. We obviously, our show is watched vastly by young conservatives. A lot of them are fearful of even entering colleges and universities now because they simply view them as indoctrination centers. And this story out of MIT that you've highlighted is evidence of that. What do you say to the kids who are no longer entrusting their education to universities and colleges? Is that a rightful decision, or is that something that they should face and try to fix?
Well, I think you have to be careful in your decision making. You have to be judicious in your judgment about where you're going to go to college. There are colleges that are better and colleges that are worse. There are some, a handful, mostly small places, that are really good pretty much across the board. And then there are others that are complete disasters. And it's hard for me to recommend that a student go to one that's a complete disaster, where that student is constantly feeling as though he or she is under pressure to conform, whether he or she actually agrees or not, where independence of thought is stifled, where conformism is the rule. But then there are a lot of institutions that are in between, a whole lot of such institutions. At these institutions, everything depends on the courses you select, and above all, the professors who are teaching those courses. So if you want to go to Harvard, for example, it's one of those in-between places. And if you've got the credentials that will enable you to get into Harvard, you can get a great education at Harvard even today. Now, there are going to be some professors who are just going to do indoctrination. And you have to worry that if you don't go along, they'll even dock your grades. There are such people. It's terrible. It's a real sin against the ethics of intellectual life to do that. But it happens. You'll know who those professors are. The word spreads. Stay away from them. You don't even learn from them anyway. They're not really interested in teaching you. They're interested in indoctrinating you. Indoctrination is the very opposite of education. It's the antithesis of education. I'd rather people be ignorant than be indoctrinated. Of course, I don't want anybody to be ignorant. I want learning. But if those are the only two options, indoctrination or ignorance, I'll take the ignorance, because at least then we still have hope. We haven't turned people into automatons. The day will come maybe when they can learn something. But there are still plenty of professors. Again, I'm just sticking with one example, Harvard. The same would be true at a lot of great state universities around the country, a lot of other private universities, small and large around the country. You choose wisely. You choose the best professors. You study with the best professors. Now, at these institutions, sometimes there are mandatory courses, or courses that are mandatory if you want to do advanced work in a certain field. And sometimes you're just going to have to put up with a professor that it would be best to avoid if you possibly could. There you just have to put your head down and bowl through. But even in those cases, I want to be very clear. Do not be a conformist. Challenge that professor. If that professor is giving you a set of readings and they're all on one side, that's what indoctrination is. That's how it works. They give you a set of readings on a controversial topic and all the readings are on one side, the professor's own side. You go to that professor privately. You don't have to have a big confrontation. And you say, "Professor, I've been doing these readings. They're very interesting. Can you recommend a reading or two that challenges what I'm being told in the readings that I've had so far? I mean, who are the best writers on the opposite side of this question? No matter what the issue is, put the professor on the spot. I think at that point, you're going to have a very embarrassed professor who's going to start mumbling a few things. Whatever you do, do not say things you don't believe, even to get good grades. We need some courage here, including for our young people. Now, we also need it for older people. A lot of professors themselves are not exemplifying courage. Our biggest problem is the lack of courage right now, especially among the grown-ups. But even as young men and women going through the educational process, don't compromise yourself by saying things you don't believe, even to get good grades. That impacts your character. You don't want that. It might get you the A, it might get you on to the next step, but it has a negative impact on your character. You need to be a truth teller. You need to be a truth seeker, and a truth seeker is a truth speaker. Don't say things that are false. I can't recommend that to anybody. I'd put it in religious terms, trust in the Lord and move ahead. Speak the truth as God gives you to see the truth. Don't become a conformist.
Wow. Everybody, listen up. Are you taking notes? Because this is straight from the horse's mouth at Princeton University. You need to know that this is what you need to do. Now, Robert, I want to end on one final note. Now, Jordan Peterson states that dialogue is the avenue to truth. And now there's a group of people in this country and really across the world that is trying to shut down that avenue to truth. And I place a lot of blame on students that try to cancel people like Dorian Abbott simply for having views that were so outside of the subject matter that he was going to be speaking about at MIT. But I also place a lot of blame on the professors and administrators that allowed that to take place. What is your message to those people who are trying to shut down that avenue to truth?
I would remind them that we have the word academic and we use it in the way we use it today because of something that existed way back in classical antiquity in Athens, Plato's Academy, where young men came to argue and debate. Now, why did they come to argue and debate, not just be indoctrinated? They came because Plato, who was taught by his own teacher Socrates, believed, as we should all believe, that the way to get to the truth is to consider the best arguments on both or all sides of questions on which reasonable people of goodwill disagree. And that is almost all questions. I mean, almost all questions that actually come to the fore in academic life are questions on which reasonable people of goodwill disagree. I happen to be a conservative, old-fashioned, strong conservative. But there are reasonable people of goodwill on the progressive side who disagree with me. And if we're going to get at the truth of things, I need to be open to listening to what they have to say, listening to their arguments, listening to the best arguments to be made for nationalized health care or whatever the issue is that they are promoting. And they, if they're to get at the truth of things, need to listen and allow themselves to be challenged by people like me who challenge that progressive ideology. That's how we're going to get to the truth of things. We're fallible, all of us, every single one of us. We can make mistakes, intellectual mistakes as well as moral mistakes. And we can make mistakes not only about the small, trivial, superficial matters of life. We can make mistakes about big things. And in the past, we know conservatives have made big mistakes and progressives have made big mistakes. If you want details, I'll go into them for you. So we know we're no better than our forebears. We're made of flesh and blood and skin and bone. We're fallible just as they are. There are things we might very well be mistaken on. Again, whether you're on the right or the left. Now, how are we going to move if we are in error from error to truth? How are we going to figure out that we're in error? By allowing ourselves to be challenged. If we shut down people who disagree with us, we're going to be stuck in our error. We're going to be in that echo chamber, constantly reinforced by our friends, told that, oh yeah, you're right. Oh yeah, you're right. We're never going to get out of the rut of error and back on the track of truth. So let's be Socratic. Let's be like Plato. Let's make today's academy like Plato's academy. Where are the best arguments, the best positions, the best that's been thought and said on competing sides of questions is shared with our students so that they can learn to think more deeply, more critically, and above all, for themselves.
Wow, fantastic. I think there's no better way to sum up that. What I want to say is thank you so much for being on the show. It's really been a pleasure. If you guys want to hear more from this very brilliant man, he does have a 5-minute video that we put out last week that goes over the differences between a republic and a democracy. Robert, how else can people support you in your endeavors?
Well, I'm active in social media. My Facebook friend list has hit the limit, although people can get onto the waiting list. Twitter, there is no limit. So I'm there. My Twitter handle is at McCormickProf. Also, I have a website. It's simply robertpgeorge.com. robertpgeorge.com. I'm an old guy. The social media is still something I'm getting the hang of. robertpgeorge.com, which includes many of my writings, access to my books, a calendar of my speaking engagements, videos of my past lectures, even my musical performances. I'm a bluegrass banjo player. I was born and brought up in the hills of West Virginia, and that's our native music, and I play a lot of banjo, and some of my banjo videos are up. So that website, robertpgeorge.com, is up there for anybody who'd like to learn more about what I think or how I sound.
That is great. We're going to leave those links also down in the description below if you guys want to see more and hear more and read more. Robert, thank you again for being on the show. It's really been a pleasure.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
What a great guest on the show, man. Robert had so much to say, so well spoken, and he's a testament to the fact that there are still good professors out there at universities, which gives me hope.
Hope. Yes, not just optimism.
Not optimism.
No, why couldn't we have professors like that in college?
I know, I know.
I'm also, when are you going to let me off of your Facebook friend waiting list? I'm still...
Oh, are you?
Are you all maxed out? You all maxed out on
is
your...
Is there a max out on Facebook friends?
I'm just kidding.
No, but seriously, no, is there?
If you have a page, an infinity number of people can like it. But if you have like your actual Facebook friends, like on your normal Facebook, then it's like caps out at like 2,000 or something.
Well, that's something I didn't even know.
Anyways.
Well, good for you, Robert.
And anyways, it is robertpgeorge.com.
Yes, it is.
We found it, and it is linked below. So
robertpgeorge.com. Go and follow what he has to say. Learn some things. Listen to some banjo. I'm sure there's a bunch of good stuff on there.
That was an awesome flex.
It was. Like,
by the way, I'm a banjo player.
It's like, if you want to check
West
out the
Virginia.
Videos. Right, right. Anyways,
we
guys.
All saw that coming.
That is the show for today. I am going to be making an in-depth video about my take on Christopher Columbus Day that is going to go over far more than we were able to discuss on the live today. I'm even going to talk about some of the people that we put on a pedestal today that maybe to today's standards and the leftist standards of judging people historically through modernity, maybe they should be canceled too. Maybe certain people shouldn't have days for their celebration if we're going by leftist logic. So that video is going to be out within the next few hours. So be on the lookout. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live, 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. Leave us a 5-star review there to let everybody know that you love the show, to let us know that you love the show. If you'd like to get a text for when we're live, text live to 41776. That is TO41776, because I've been getting DMs saying I texted the numbers 241776. No, that is TO41776. Thank you guys so much for watching.
Thanks for watching, and happy Columbus Day.
Happy Columbus Day.
Go out and enjoy some of the blessings of Western civilization today.
Yes, that Columbus contributed to. Bye, guys.
Peace.